Come out to the coast, we'll get together, have a few laughs.
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfuckers, and welcome to your second helping of Dropping a Bruce, the monthly podcast where we watch every single one of Bruce Willis's 40 to direct video releases from his acting career to see if he took the role for a paycheck and dropped a deuce, or if in fact he took the role and gave it his all and dropped a Bruce. I am the Notorious Scott K.
And from the UK, this is Steve, nothing but love, Smith. But you can call me Mr. Smith.
And together, we will be your captains on this 40-month journey through the lesser-known movies of Mr. Bruce Willis's filmography. This month's stop is the 2011 action thriller heist film, Setup. But before we get together with some lifelong friends and pull a daring daylight robbery, Mr. Smith, I gotta know, we came into this cold without giving away too much. Was I right on our first episode where maybe the bar was set really, really high and we were going to have a bit of that pendulum swing back the other way where we'll probably enjoy this discussion we're about to have about this film, but not as enthusiastic as the last one.
Right. Okay. Now, in the grand scheme of things, you are right, but I have to be honest.
As usual.
Ah! What the fuck? I didn't hate it. How's that?
That's fair.
I didn't hate it. There are problems which we'll get to.
Yep.
I'm sure. I've got a lot of thoughts on this. And for anyone who thinks we can't do an hour show on a straight to DVD Bruce Willis movie.
Come on. You don't know us.
We're even going to have to edit this down, probably.
I spent an hour and a half just talking about a scene from a Tarantino film. I do that in my sleep, motherfuckers.
Anyway, don't challenge me. Anywho. But yes, so in the grand scheme of things, this isn't up to the standard of the last movie. But I've got words to say. I'm not going to be quite as brutal as you may think. But anyway, yes.
Well, I would like to, one, thank those of you who are listening to us on a very brand new, well, not brand new, brand new to us, but we have just recently been invited on to the last of the Action Heroes Podcast Network, which is where some of you are listening to this right now. The great Mr. Ryan Rebelkin, who I had the pleasure of meeting through my Tarantino podcast, reached out to us and asked if we would bring this show on there. And we're very, very excited to. He has responded back to me and seems more excited that we're on. I was like, dude, we're more excited that you invited us.
Yeah, very grateful.
And the funny thing is I was thinking about saying something to him when I first came up with the idea, but I was like, I don't want to be on, you know, like this, like, hey, by the way, Ryan, I think we've got this great idea that should be on your network. I thought, no, if he likes the show, maybe he'll ask one day, but for him to reach out before we put the show up, our first episode. So very, very excited to be a part of the network.
Absolutely.
With all the other shows on it that we'll talk more about at the end of the episode. Those of you, don't worry. We will have plenty to talk about, or I'll find plenty of clips to play in order to make this episode go. So we are going to jump into it with our opening section that we call...
What you talking about, Willis?
Just the facts, man. Just the facts.
This movie was released in 2011. Written by Mike Berman and Mike Gunther. Directed by Mike Gunther. Starring 50 Cent, Bruce Willis, Ryan Phillippe, Jenna Dewan, Randy Couture, and James Remar. With a runtime of 85 minutes, holding a 4.4 IMDb rating and a no critics rating and 17 fans rating on Rotten Tomatoes. A group of friends become involved in a risky diamond heist that turns deadly when one of them betrays the others, leading to a surviving member to team up with a dangerous mob boss in an effort to get revenge. Dune Entertainment and 20th Century Fox present Setup.
Don't worry about a thing. Set it up, knock it down.
Let's do this.
Check it out.
5 million. Woo!
Is there anything you want me to tell your son before I kill him?
Ivan, hey, how you doing in there?
Sal.
This defeats the whole fucking purpose of interrogating him.
How are you going to get anything out of him if he's dead?
You think you're going to come into my town, shoot whoever you want without my permission?
You managed to piss off a very important group of people that I make money with. That means you owe me now.
Bring him up.
Hey, Aqualung, let me tell you something. God ain't here, okay? God has left Detroit. I'm your only God today. So you better tell me what happened to my fucking money. Explain it to me again.
Vincent has your money.
The same guy that shot you, Whack Petey, took my money.
I'm gonna find him.
So you can shoot him. I have a different plan. Just let me do the talking when we get there, all right?
What's the matter, Vince? Look like you've seen a fucking ghost.
Where's my money?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Last chance.
Everything you got in this world is because of me! Everything you fucking are is because of me!
Yeah, that's right. Every fucking thing I say is right.
Mr. Willis is in this film in a supporting role. He plays a character named Biggs, who is the local mob boss in Detroit, who also enjoys reading the sports section while he eats his breakfast. Now, I think an important thing we should talk about right before now is that Mr. Willis eventually will be doing a whole lot more of these down his career. This is 3 years from his first one that we just did. He'll do one more in this year that we'll talk about. And he does a couple spread out until 2019 when, as we said in the very first episode, Motherless Brooklyn drops. And then from there, it's 26 consecutive. These films are direct-to-DVD, direct-to-video, however you want to put them. We call them STDs for a moment. However, there's another term, and this actually is attributed to your neck of the woods, the term geezer. The term geezer, it's interesting. Like, I know that in your neck of the woods, the term geezer is more of a connotation towards tough guy, correct? Am I wrong in that? Is it more like an older, seasoned, tough guy?
Yeah, I mean, it's become something like, I guess, an American way would be, we use it like you use the word dude, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah, not necessarily, but yeah, geezer.
Yeah.
You know, geezer is it's a term of endearment to some extent, much like the word cunt in this country. But geezer, you know, he's a good geezer. It's not something you would use in a derogatory way, certainly. Do you know what I mean?
Well, it is used a bit here in America as a derogatory way.
Okay.
So I actually believe this new term is called geezer teasers, which is basically older, one-time, A-list, almost, I would want to say almost action stars, or at least guys who are considered, I would say, who play tough guy roles. De Niro's done a few. Liam Neeson seems to be doing them all the time now. Nick Cage did them, but those are a little different reason. As I said in the first episode, he had a really big high tax bill he had to do for a while. But Pacino's done them. Like, there's a bunch of guys doing these, and they're called geezer teasers. And I believe that they're leaning into the double meaning of the word. The first being geezer from where you're calling them, where tough guys, good dudes, but also you using the term we use, which is geezer for an old man. Like, this, look at this fucking old, look at this geezer over here.
Okay,
so
right,
more of an old guy. So it kind of is pulling both. So yes, Mr. Willis has been doing the geezer roles. Now, there's a couple of reasons for that. One of the main reasons that I read was that he decided to start doing this, whether he knew or not that he had this, I guess, this new diagnosis, or maybe he felt it, but that he has young children. So him and Demi Moore had kids. They've since moved on, obviously, but he has a younger wife and they have younger kids. So he did this as a way to kind of boost up the money that they would have later on in life, because he gets paid $1 million a picture. So those 26 in a row, he made $26 million in the matter of 2-3 years.
Well, did he? But he probably didn't see all 26.
And a lot of them, as we'll go through and as more information I find out, he's only on set sometimes 1 to 2 days for some of these films.
Yeah.
And I think this film we're about to talk about is one of those type of films. As we get into the more crux and meat of them, I'll get more further into the people that he comes across and starts doing them with, and there's a certain gentleman. I don't want to do it right now because this is one of those films.
No, we'll get that.
This is definitely a geezer teaser. I think even before it was geezer teaser, this is because it's 2011. Yeah. We're 12 years ahead of this, but this is definitely one of those. And he plays a geezer, an old mob boss from Detroit named Biggs. Now, as we're about to jump into this, I will say this. As I have said when I was doing my now 3 years, crazy, it's been 3 exact years almost to the date that I started the Nicolas Cage podcast with my old friend. He is maybe the best part of this film. When he is on screen, he definitely brings quite a bit to it. We'll get into it when we get to his parts. But he definitely is probably the best part of this film. At least in our early goings, I have watched a few of them. And so far, I'm going to come to the conclusion early on that at least early, he is still putting in effort and really trying to get, you know, make the most of even how many small days he's on set.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. He's fun in this movie. And he actually looks like he's having a good time himself. He's present.
He's still swinging. He's taking the role. He's getting the money, but he's not mailing it in. And I don't know, haven't asked you yet if you've watched the movie that we'll be doing next month, but I'm still up on the first three. And in the first three, I have found that he has really put some joy into these films. He still looks like he's enjoying making movies, which is good at the point. I mean, this is 12 years ago.
Yeah. No, you're ahead of me. I'm tending to watch each movie a few days before we record, just so I'm an old man, you know.
You're a geezer.
I'm an old geezer. I need my memory to be fresh on these. If I watch it 2 weeks in advance, I'll forget everything. I can't even remember what I had for breakfast this morning. But he's having fun in this movie.
Well, let's jump right into this. So this movie.
Let's go.
All right, so. As you've heard in the What You Talking About, Willis, you know that the other two major stars in this film are the great 50 Cent and Ryan Phillippe. And the film opens with Ryan Phillippe leaving a prison. We don't know right off the bat if he's leaving prison because he's being released from prison or for what reason. But it feels like he's being released from prison. But we realize that he's been visiting his father, who we'll come to find out is played by really another good actor actually in this film, James Remar. There are two people in this film who are really putting in the work, who probably only spent like 2 days on set, and there's the rest who've been there for whatever 28-day, 30-day shoot this is, and boy, they look like the geezers. They look like they are flat out of gas as they go through this film.
Well, obviously, so 50 Cent, one of the producers on the movie.
He is.
And I did find it very funny at the very beginning. The production team are called Hedge Fund Partners. So I thought, I can see where this is going.
What should give you a clue is, I don't know who is in charge or what local band they found for the soundtrack to throw in some songs.
Wow.
We're not in Tarantino territory here. We're not getting good needle drops. We're getting somebody's uncle who gave some money, who gave money just so they could get their sons or cousins banded, and they fucking suck. I didn't even look who they were because I don't want to offend somebody. They fucking blow.
That's funny you mentioned Tarantino because I thought, yes, this is what happens when you think you can make a Tarantino-esque movie.
This is at least told straightforward. I guess that's the positive.
Yes. I'm not going to be too negative.
I'm trying not to be.
There's definitely. Well, to all the Tarantino naysayers who think I'm that easy.
Yeah. Go ahead and watch Setup.
Well, there you go. Yeah. Look, I'm not going to be too mean on this movie, but yeah, so 50 Cent was one of the producers.
And whoever else helped get money and got their nephews, uncles, son, daughter, maybe he's banging this band, it's awful. Whenever their music plays, it's awful.
Yeah, it's a very considerate 85 minutes long as well, which very grateful for that.
But it feels longer. It does. So the setup is three good friends, apparently. Three really good friends for reasons that really aren't apparent to us at the beginning of the film. They stop by to pick up a guy who's a friend of theirs who just moved in to a new place. And he his girlfriend's there and he dips on her. He's like, I don't know. I don't know many women who are that cool, who are just like, oh, hey, yeah, we just moved in and you want to go have beers with these two fucking schmucks while I'm trying to move into our new place? Go right ahead. They pick him up. You know right away he's not going to make it to the movie. Because he's picked up by two of the leads, and you have no idea who this fucking guy is. He's not even a character you've ever seen before, an actor before, and you're like, it's like a Star Trek. He's wearing the red fucking shirt. You're like, this motherfucker is going to die. I knew immediately. I was like, he's dead. Yeah. Like, we're showing him with a loved one. So right off the bat, we're like, okay, we know he's dead.
I was going to say, he's like the guy in the war movie who starts talking about his family back home.
He's the one who just gets the loving letter from a wife that he's pregnant or something like that. Yeah. He's dead.
Shit. Will you read this letter from my wife to me?
You're dead. You're dead. Yeah. Oh, but he goes up. So, I mean, they get together. And they go up on this roof and they just start drinking and like Ryan Felipe's in a pissy mood. Like, I don't know what the beginning of the movie. I'm just like, this is what we're doing. Like he leaves in the afternoon, maybe late afternoon. He gets in the car and they go to the rooftop to drink there's just no reason. Just that maybe they were able to get, it's easier. It's cheaper. Location money. They were able to get a roof.
That's to set them.
They got a roof.
How do we tell everybody
in the city, hey, let's go on the roof and drink like everybody does who's a tough guy.
Well, they didn't do the cliche standing on the street corner thing, did they? They're up on the roof.
That happens. And then we're supposed to assume that the very next day, they're going to do a daylight robbery out of fucking blue. Out of the blue.
Not only out of the blue, out in the open, out in the middle of the street. There's no subtlety with this crime.
So the writer, which you've already heard, Mr. Mike Berman, and also the director, Mr. Mike Gunther, they're also really big fans of the movie Heat and The Town, because they combine two elements of this film, but don't do it well at all. Their daylight robbery, if you can call it a robbery, is a courier who has a case on his arm, is driving, and they happen to know the car because eventually we find out we've got an inside man or woman. We've got an inside person who is driving them, and we know instead of following them to some, I don't know, maybe have this person drive them to a side street or to a parking garage. No, their plan is to have a van, wear masks, have assault rifles, and then decide to pull into traffic and stop traffic and just start opening fire willy-nilly style. Like I said, this is Heat. They wanted to recreate the Heat scene. Yeah. But at least in Heat, there was a reason. They're just shooting indiscriminate bullets for no reason. Cars going everywhere.
Yeah, this is more like Luke. This is more like lukewarm than Heat. Yeah.
This is piss warm. Piss warm. The guy pulls over, they pull him out, they take the thing, and instead of, you know, letting him live, of course, just like in Heat, but except in the beginning of Heat, where we know why this guy Wayne Grove does what he does, he just shoots the guy dead because that's what's got to happen in this movie. And they get these diamonds, and away we go for no reason. They drive off, and it's for $5 million. There's $5 million worth of diamonds that they've now stolen, and we don't really know how they're going to fence him, but it doesn't matter. For no reason, also, suddenly, there's a double cross. There is a double cross that makes no fucking sense whatsoever. James Remar is a convict in prison. Now, he's excellent as a convict. Like, he's really good. However,
well, he's as hot-headed as he was in The Warriors.
He is, but I wrote this down. Every shit-ass gangster film has to use the N-word in it, okay? So, coming from the Tarantino world, the N-word is used, but it's never felt out of place, except for maybe Pulp Fiction, when you look back on Jimmy saying the N-word about the storage. That doesn't hold its weight anymore. However, the rest of the stuff, you never feel...
Well, I disagree with that, obviously.
That's for other reasons.
But I know it, yeah. No, I mean... So
we get set up that Remar fights this black guy for they're both mopping a floor.
But he is a racist.
Oh, he's a racist, no doubt.
I mean,
yeah.
No, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I get it.
He's not using it in the...
Like I'm saying, it's very heavy-handed and it's very poor writing. So basically, this robbery is being done so that Ryan Felipe can continue to pay protection money to keep his dad out of Gen Pop, because his dad's such a fucking piece of shit racist that the majority of the black prisoners want to kill this motherfucker. They want him dead.
Yeah.
And the only way to keep him safe is to keep him in solitary confinement. And the only way to do that is to pay for it. Now, $5 million in diamonds split between three guys. Plenty of money. Actually, I would be willing to bet that these other two friends would be happy with taking $1 million apiece and letting you hold on to $3 million so you can help your dad out. You do not need to double cross them for any stretch of the imagination. And then in every poor gangster written film, which again, since everyone thinks Tarantino can just steal things and it's just easy, clearly Mr. Berman and Gunther aren't able to do so. The two Mikes have him kills one friend, but who do you think doesn't get killed, my friends? 50 Cent, because that motherfucker cannot be smoked.
Mr. Curtis Jackson, as I like, I call
I'm
it
sorry,
Curtis
Mr. Curtis Jackson.
Jackson. For respect for his acting career.
Yes.
You know, this is
very sincere.
He wears many hats, this guy. Wears many hats.
So he gets shot. He survives, of course, because, you know, in all badly written movies, you don't make sure the guy you want dead is dead. You shoot, you hope, and you just drive away. You just shoot and pray. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a bit weak. Yeah. That's weak.
When I was younger, I broke my collarbone playing football. My brother was a little heavier than me at the time, and so was another kid. And I got tackled sideways on the ground. So, oh, I'm sorry, for those of you who are English guests, American football, I apologize. I got tackled, my right shoulder went down, and they landed on me on my left, and the weight and pressure cracked and broke my collarbone. Apparently, in the world of Curtis Jackson and the setup, a bullet can get lodged in your collarbone. The fuck it can. A collarbone.
This is a movie, though. Let's get that clear.
Of all the things he could have said, of all the places it could have been lodged, it could have been the shoulder. At least there's meat and muscle. And of course,
you've got a problem with that.
The problem really is he gets shot, and the first place he thinks to go, who someone's going to have medical training, is some tattoo shop that only one guy works at, that's not busy at all, and that he is just ready and has all the info of what's going on in town. So this one guy's in the movie for 3 seconds. He goes, oh, luckily it's lodged in your collarbone. I laughed my ass off the second time I saw that. It's the most ridiculous place.
You know, it's a small town. This is very
small
town. And I don't think Curtis Jackson's got health insurance.
He doesn't have insurance.
But I will give a shout out to the, I want to give a shout out to the tattooist. Because when he does pull the bullet out, he drops it into a flask and not the cliched metal tray that you normally would drop it in.
Yes.
So I'll give him a shout out for dropping it into a flask.
Do you remember what he's going to do? He's going to turn it into some kind of cool piercing or tattoo. He's also going to melt it down and whatever.
Well, it did hit. It did
a collarbone.
Hit Curtis Jackson.
His nose lodged there.
No, it hit his, medallion thing as well, didn't it?
I don't know.
Around his neck.
Of course it did. Yeah.
Well, it did. So I'm paying more attention to you
because he said it's lodged in your collarbone, and I was like, "Fuck you! It's lodged."
We're watching. I think you're getting confused. We're watching a movie. Yeah. This isn't real life, man. If this was real life, none of this would happen.
Thing
okay?
underneath that, but with writing this good, it's no wonder why this film got made.
Well, you know, yeah. But I hear you. Anyway, let's not get, we're going off track slightly.
Here's the sad thing. We haven't even gotten to Bruce yet. I mean, I'm sitting here going, because this is the second time I've seen it, but again, it was a year, and I was like, fuck, when does Bruce at least fucking come on screen? Because I remember enjoying him in it. I'm like, please save this. But no, we have to have, as again, in all poorly written gangster films, we bring in the church element. We've got to have the bad guy who just has lost his way with God. And if he could just find his way, there's always going to be a clergyman who's going to try to get him on his path because he can tell right away that he's a wayward saint. Who the fuck gets shot in the collarbone, has a friend who's dead, and the first thing you think about doing is, I gotta go pray?
You wouldn't be talking shit like this.
I'm asking you questions because
this
is a good movie.
This has happened in a million fucking movies and you'd never question it. That's not what makes this movie shitty. The fact that he went to church doesn't ruin this movie, okay?
No. How about this? In Brian De Palma's The Untouchables, after a character is killed, they're in there, and what happens in that scene? One of the greatest dialogue moments ever from the great Sean Connery, when he talks about the Chicago way.
Doing his Irishman with a Scottish accent.
He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the fucking Chicago way.
And then you're sitting there,
you forget they're even in the church. You're fucking excited about it. In this one, I'm waiting for Sean Connery to come up and shoot the preacher. And go, this is the Detroit, my father's. We're not in Chicago, we're in Detroit.
Well, I think we're clear on that. This is no Untouchables, okay? I think we can agree there.
I think you silently fell in love with this movie. I think you silently fell in love with Ryan Phillippe.
Hey, listen, I watch a lot of movies.
I believe
his
shirt is off.
I've seen shittier big budget movies than this.
Fair.
That's all I'm saying.
On that occasion,
but I'm not
I would agree.
You know, argument, really. I mean, don't be under any illusion that I'm not going to hunt out the DVD for my collection.
Listen, I think we did say in our first episode, some of these were taking a bullet. We're getting them lodged in our collarbone, apparently, for these people so they don't have to watch them.
Yeah.
I'm just giving them what's going down. I can't change the truth. I can't change the facts.
Just the facts.
So those of you out there, if you're in a major city and you are shot and you are lucky enough to have a bullet lodged in your collarbone, seek out a very quiet and not overly populated tattoo parlor. Apparently, you never know. You might be able to find a person who would have been a doctor had things gone the right way. And they can perform medical on you.
Yeah, well, also, once he's taken the bullet slug out, get a tattoo, you know?
Get a piercing. Apparently, he's going to smelt it down and make a piercing.
I just mean just to commemorate the situation, get a tattoo.
Can we also say one thing? I'm sorry. For all the gangster rap lyrics and tough guy persona that 50 Cent is in his 50 Cent world, he can't act like a fucking thug for shit, right?
Yeah,
am I wrong?
Is he? He's the thug with a heart of gold.
I get
this,
but,
he? Plus, he's
I
one of the worst
it.
Fucking rappers in history, this guy.
Listen, we're talking about his movie career right now, not his rapping career. But
well,
in
no,
his rap persona.
Yeah, but he's not doing his rap persona. This is him as an actor.
No, you're
the
right.
One who just...
What I'm saying is, in his rap persona, he can act at least like he's a tough guy from the streets of New York.
That's debatable.
He can't even pull it off. In the chance to actually play someone he knows from the streets, he can't even pull it off.
He raps like he's eating his fucking dinner.
I get
time.
It, but Ryan Felipe is more... We haven't gotten to him yet. Ryan Felipe is more...
Felipe.
More, I know, we should have that guy from the person, Father Newell. Yeah. Ryan Felipe.
Ryan Felipe.
Oh, but Ryan Felipe is a little more believable as a tough guy than 50 Cent is at all in this film. At all. I'm sorry. It was just like trope after trope. And I was like,
well, in the grand
fuck.
Scheme of things, 50, I mean, I don't think we're given any revelations here that 50 Cent can't act, you know?
Well, no, here's where I wrote it and why I wrote it down. All right. Forget the whole craziness of why any of this is even happening. Why the ball is even in play at this moment. He goes to the poker game, and this is where we find, I mean, the only reason he goes to the poker game is so we can bring Bruce Willis's character into this.
Yes.
The only reason he shows up at this poker game for no fucking reason, thank God, I mean, I guess I should at least take a nod that thank you for having this, because then we get Bruce in the show. But he goes to this poker game, this one-note gangster poker game, where everyone watched one gangster film, and of course, like every gangster film that's done badly, he's going to rob a poker game. Just so we can get some information.
That's what I would have done.
I mean, even the guys in it are the worst. Like, they look like they could be gangsters, and they can't act like gangsters. Like, if your one thing you do to get a role is you look like a gangster, an Italian mobster, the one thing you should be able to at least do is act like a fucking Italian mobster.
Hey, you fucking...
None of that. No, you fucking crazy. You fucking... Fuck none of that. It's just like a bunch of guys who can barely talk, and there's always one guy who miles off, and he gets hit with a gun, and then everyone realizes, oh, he's serious. It's the same old trope. One guy miles off, he gets hit with a gun.
85 minutes long. It's economic filmmaking. It's just, we need to get this fucking movie... Moving. We need to get moving here. Come on.
It's shit up to this point. And then we get fucking Bruce Willis finally.
Hey, there he is.
Finally, he shows up.
The man.
Finally. Now, here's another question. Now, there's another guy who shows up, and I've seen him in other films. I can't think of his name right now. But he comes and threatens them. Threatens 50. For some reason, they know that he stole the diamonds. No fucking clue. I mean, they were so discreet about this whole caper anyways. I'm surprised they knew he did it. But he knows he did it, and he's given him like a week to... Was he sent? Did we ever find out? Was he sent by Bruce Willis's character or by?
We haven't got time for that, man. We've got, you know.
But
that
was the thing
with
it today before I recorded with you. I was like, wait, do we even know who he worked for? Like, he shows up.
That's not important.
He's there
man.
To collect, but we don't know who he's working for. Like, I guess there's another party out there that we don't even know.
This kind of thing happens. Look, this kind of thing happens all the time. They know. You know, they're
gotcha.
Always in
gotcha.
Out of trouble.
Yeah.
They're always
you're
in
right.
out of trouble.
Yeah,
they know who these
yeah.
guys are.
You know what?
There's only three criminals
yeah.
in that part of town.
It's easy.
They know who it's going to be.
It's easy. I mean, you just borrow from other movies. It's easy. It was
yeah,
easy.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's easy.
Yeah.
Cake.
Like Tarantino does.
Easy.
Like Tarantino
yeah, exactly.
does. Just take it from something else. It's that
easy.
Simple.
Yeah. Yeah, hey. Just have a guy show up. Oh, I'm going to threaten you. You better give me the diamonds. You don't have them with you now. You know what? I'm going to give you, how about a week? Is a week good for you? Get the fuck out of here. You don't take a finger? Get the fuck off. Anyways, come on.
Yeah, sorry.
Then we get Bruce. Bruce shows up. He picks him up. When he comes on screen, Bruce is performing. he almost looks like it's like a caricature. He's actually putting a performance on, but because everything else has been so one note, so bland, so devoid of actual any acting skills, when he comes on, it's almost jarring because you're like, wait a minute, someone's acting. You know what I mean?
I'll give you that. Bruce Willis shows up and it's like, he's doing what he can to elevate the material.
Yes.
And the pro that he is, he makes that movie.
Yeah.
You know, he's in the movie for what, 15 minutes?
Yeah.
I think that's maximum 15 minutes.
Yeah.
He owns them 15 minutes.
Oh,
he's
100%.
He's on top form.
You're excited when he comes on.
Yeah, he's as good as he is in any Bruce Willis movie in them 15 minutes.
Agreed.
But that just goes to show, how great he is.
Yes.
You know, that in them 15 minutes, he can totally make that movie.
He could have completely mailed this in. Everyone else, I mean, I know everyone else probably isn't trying to mail it in, but besides him and James Remar, who are the only two guys who are acting, and each time they act, and this is what might, if people see this, is jarring, it's because there's so little real acting going on.
Well,
when they actually come on screen, it almost feels farcical because you've been lulled to sleep by the inability of everyone else in the fucking film to act, and you're falling asleep, and these two guys actually, when they come on screen, you're like, oh, this is fantastic. You know, like, Remar is giving a performance. Willis is giving a performance. Everyone else is just shitting in their hand and wiping in their hair. It's that fucking bad.
Well, so far, anyway,
Ryan Phillippe, we haven't gotten into his Oscar performance yet, but we're getting there.
Well, you know, we'll get there. No, there's someone else that I think delivers the goods, but we haven't reached
really?
That point yet. Yeah, there is someone who's pretty good. Come on, Randy Couture. But we haven't got there.
We're almost there.
Yeah, but he's great. He's so watchable.
He's
so
one note. Oh.
Well, no, but he is. Of course he's one note. He's a fucking MMA fighter. He's not
I know.
Fucking
no,
Pacino,
you know what?
He?
You know what? In fairness, you know what? I will be fair. That's absolutely right. He deserves. He gets a pass for being
absolutely.
As shitty as he is. The rest of these
Come
guys,
on.
Like Felipe, get
he's
no
better
pass.
Better than Felipe.
Oh, my
Felipe.
God. Yes. Yes. 100%.
He's a bozo, and he's very watchable and entertaining.
Yes. That's one of the better scenes. But
we need to. We haven't got there yet. We're getting ahead.
I know. It feels like we've already been on this an hour.
Yeah. Well, you might be. Maybe you can cut. You're gonna have to do some fucking Thelma Schoonmaker type editing.
Oh no! It's just. Oh God. So, but Bruce, when he does show up. It is refreshing. He is great. He's, like I said, he's trying everything. I actually feel like the writers actually, whether it was in the writing process or once they got on set, I feel like they actually tried to give both Remar and Willis something.
Agreed.
Right? Felipe gives nothing. Felipe is, one of my notes is, how the fuck does Felipe keep getting work? And then I said, why does anyone let 50 Cent into their film? Because I forgot he produced it.
According to my research, he didn't even want to be in this movie.
You can fucking tell. You can tell. Yeah.
Well, there you go. Fair enough.
Look, can we just be honest? He can't act. One of my favorite movies of the 21st century, came out 2000, is a great movie from Christopher McQuarrie, his first directorial debut after he was the Academy Award winning for writing Usual Suspects. So it's his second movie he wrote, but first he got to direct. And it's Way of the Gun with him and Benicio del Toro.
Yeah.
Love that movie. James Caan's. It's a great film. Felipe is decent in that film. What helps is he's got a lot of great actors around him. And because they're really putting in work, especially del Toro, Felipe's probably it's his best role. Other than that, maybe women find him attractive back then. I don't know. Maybe late 90s, early 2000s, women found him attractive. I don't know. I guess that's how he kept getting roles. But
he started off in like Cruel Intentions or something.
Yeah, Cruel Intentions.
A bit of a pretty boy type.
Yeah.
See, he's a pretty boy actor, which means he doesn't need to be an actor. Then he tries, you know, he stretches himself in something like Way of the Gun, which he doesn't suck in. He's pretty decent.
That'll be on his tombstone. I don't suck in this movie.
Well, no, but I mean, you know, he's decent enough in that. You know, this movie, I don't think any actor was really going to make this movie top tier.
No.
Okay?
No, you're right.
He's not the weakest part of this fucking movie, that's for sure. 50 Cent is the fucking weak spot.
Yeah. And unfortunately, he basically becomes the
and
lead character.
And he's the lead. He is the lead.
And he's not good. He's terrible.
No, 50 Cent is the lead.
Yeah.
So, and he can't act. That's the problem. Ryan Phillippe being a pretty boy actor with very limited range is not really the big issue in this movie. But I know what you're saying, though. I know what you're saying. He is the movie's villain. He is the villain of the piece. He could be chewing the scenery. He could be doing anything. He could be yelling and cursing like James Remar, his father, in this.
Yes.
But he's not. So I get that. I'm not arguing. I'm not going
to
argue.
Even if he tried to just imitate James Remar,
That's what I'm
that would have been better, right? Like, yeah, even no, if he had given an attempt to even be like his father, but the guy who plays his father.
Well, all I'm saying is, I'm not going to shit on him as an actor. I'm just going to say, he doesn't show up. He doesn't.
Well, you can't shit on him as an actor because he's not an actor.
He is an actor.
No.
He is a fucking actor.
He's a pretty boy who gets put into movies.
But he didn't get in the way of the gun because he's a fucking pretty boy. What I'm saying is.
He's probably cheap.
Okay. He just doesn't fucking show up to the. He doesn't show up, does he?
No.
He's just a fucking void. And he's the villain of the movie, which is a fucking problem. That's the problem. When your lead actor is a fucking void, and so is the villain.
The problem is that the guys who wrote this try to make Willis's character the villain. While he's a bad guy, he's a gangster, he's not the villain of the film. He's just like, hey, you stepped on my toes by robbing my really lame poker game.
Can I just say one thing before I forget? This film would have been so much better if Ryan Phillippe and 50 Cent swapped roles.
Yeah, I mean, couldn't have hurt. I can't.
Listen. This is not going to win. This wasn't going to win at the Oscars.
If 50 Cent and Ryan Phillippe were played by cats, just hear me out.
Yeah. That might have been better. Oh, you can't drop that bombshell.
Might have been better.
No, I'm just saying, look, because Ryan Phillippe is no tough guy. 50 Cent, as you pointed out, in his rap persona, is a tough guy. So you should have swapped.
I mean, he's been shot. I mean, he's been actually shot many times before.
I've read the research. 50 Cent was shot 86 times in the face, and he lived to tell the tale. No, fucking listen.
In the face!
Ryan Phillippe should have been the kind of... Because, you know, 50 Cent is playing this kind of, thug with a heart of gold, and that's...
It's fucking horseshit, yes.
You need a little bit of range for that, and I would say Phillippe has that range. So they should have just swapped over. So 50 Cent should be the strong, silent, menacing villain.
Yeah.
And then you could have had Ryan Phillippe as the kind of wide-eyed innocent who's just trying to, like, get himself out of this jam. But anyway, that didn't happen. So this is what we get.
We do get Jenna Dewan is in this. Channing Tatum's wife, Jenna Dewan, is in this film.
Our ex-wife.
Big fan of Magic Mike. big fan of the podcast of our Cheeky Bastard podcast.
Yes, apparently.
And she's awful. She's not good in this. It's all one note. She can't act.
Is she Ryan Phillippe's
sister? Sister, who gets fucked up.
I actually heard, just a side note, that one of the stars of Assassination of a High School Principal, High School President.
You did it too.
Yeah, I did it too. Misha Barton was supposed to be in there.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, she was so much
conflicts,
better.
Conflicts, man.
No, yeah, that's what she said. That's what she said. She's like, yeah.
And just like Ryan Phillippe didn't want to be in this movie. I'm sure he said that before he starred in it. I don't fucking think so.
Now, if they had put the guy who was at the star of our last movie, Reese Thompson, in Felipe's role, and her, I would have, or any one of those side characters, through the roof.
This is it. Any of those guys should be playing the 50 Cent role, because 50 Cent is the heart and soul of the film, and he's got no heart or any soul. That is the issue. That is the issue with this movie. Is the lead is a fucking void. As is the villain. Yeah. I've repeated myself, I know, but that is the problem with this movie. Everyone else, fairly kind of like run-of-the-mill, mundane, but they're not, they're barely supporting roles, you know. Bruce Willis brings his fucking A-game to what is a Z-grade movie. I think that's fair to say.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But, you know, I've seen a lot worse big budget movies than this.
You know, the black gentleman who after the ridiculous thing where Bruce Willis forces 50 Cent to now have to go rob some Russians who buried money, as you do. And he's supposed to kill them, but he doesn't.
$2 million.
And then steal another $2 million. Yeah. And Randy Couture is with them. And instead of returning with the money, they decide they got to go get weed or something. And then Randy Couture, the black guy who plays the guy who's selling the guns.
He's funny.
Would have been better as 50 Cent.
Exactly.
50 Cent should have been the gun guy.
But, come on, a special shout out to Randy Couture. He is fun in this.
He's funny when he gets into the house.
But
when he's trying to play the tough guy and he's trying to really sell the tough guy role.
But that's what makes it funny. Is at first he's this tough guy and then he turns into a kind of like a he's goofing off with the guns a little bit too much as he finds out.
Hilarious.
But I think he does an admirable job considering what material he's given.
Considering that he's a UFC fighter. I mean, like, he's not going to be a Dave Bautista,
and considering the kind of person who usually plays that role. He brings something to it.
Yeah.
He's limited, of course, very, but he's got just enough to give you a little bit of a smack because even he starts throwing the N-word around.
That's just how you know it's poorly written. Like, every gangster movie...
What, because they use the N-word?
No.
Because criminals are using the N-word?
No.
Shock horror.
No, but because it feels forced. It's just out of the blue. It's always used. It's not used in like your vernacular, right?
Yeah, racists tend to use that word, mate.
But it's always used just... to throw it in.
Yeah,
but you know, like every criminal is like it's always thrown in. All bad crime movies have that because they try to steal from you know who. We won't get into that.
Well,
that's
not that every crime. I would say every crime film uses that, whether good or bad. There's plenty of good crime films that use the M word.
But when the good ones use it, you learn about the characters and you feel that that's their character. This is just like out of the blue. It's like, oh, Randy Couture said nothing. Oh, wait a minute. There's a black guy.
That is really the least of this film's problems.
No, you're absolutely right. But I'm just pointing out. I'm pointing out how you can find...
James Remar plays a racist. He uses the N word.
When Remar does it, it feels more authentic. But again, it's like, oh.
But he is a racist.
Yes,
but
in the
he's
movie.
He's going to use it. No, James Remar, sir. My point is that it's
such a poorly half-assed written movie that these people have taken so much from other things and don't know how to properly.
There's worse writing in this movie than thugs using the N-word. That's all I'm saying. If you really want to get down to it.
Everything about this movie is the opening credits is where it ends. But they really shouldn't even go past the credits.
But when you know, at the beginning, my heart sunk right at the beginning when 50 Cent starts narrating the film. I thought, oh, fuck.
He was like, you know what? I think I should narrate this just like the great Morgan Freeman. I feel like this is my Morgan Freeman role. It's my breakout because it's going to happen. Ooh. Oh,
I think you may have peaked with this movie. But anyway, but when Randy Couture and 50 Cent show up to show up to 50 Cent's friend's house and they want to get some weed, and his friend is probably one of the best side characters, he's gearing up for the apocalypse. He's got like
he's got everything.
He's got firearms for dad.
But he lives in Detroit. He does live in Detroit.
Randy Couture does the shooting. Oh god! Oh fuck! I've shot Marvin in the face.
Yes.
Situation, but he does it to himself.
He does. And then it leads us to him dropping off to some guy who works at a food processing plant, and he's chopping guy up into burger.
Which I like that part.
But it was just, you're going like, you're right. If you want to talk to somebody who gives you shit about Tarantino and he scrapbooks things and he's a hack at it, show them this film and say,
yes.
You want to see what hack looks like? This is hack. This is taking everything you've ever seen from a movie and you just put it all together with no through line, makes no sense. Every character comes in once and they disappear. Like they just come in and they're gone. Though.
When he minces the guy up chops the guy up. Yeah, that was a great scene.
But eventually, once they've robbed the Russians and they don't return it with the money, they grab some of the Russians and they start torturing them.
Which is great. Torture is always fun.
When you have a guy who's acting, like Bruce Willis is having fun doing in that scene, the guy who's playing with him actually has to give a performance. And he's actually pretty decent playing his little side henchman.
Agreed.
And Bruce is like, what's he doing? He goes, boss, I think he's drowning. I love it that they play this. They drown the one Russian because he won't give him information. But eventually, they make this weird trade with another group. There's a shootout. Willis gets shot. Does he die? Is he dead? Is his character dead? We never see him again because then we get this horrible chase through the city of Detroit.
That was bad.
Awful.
Yeah, that was a bad chase.
Awful. Do we know, did Bruce make it through? Did he die? Does his character die?
Well, I think the idea is, I personally don't know. Because it's such a badly edited scene, and it looks a little bit thrown together like they didn't. The continuity is so bad in that end shootout.
What they had in that shootout is they had one chance with a certain amount of blanks they could fire, and that's all they got. So we're going to film this shootout, and then when we run out of blanks to fire, these two fuckwads are going to chase each other in one of the worst chase sequences on foot ever filmed. But they're just like, fuck it. We don't need to worry about what happens at the end. Like, at this point, they were like, is anyone even watching at this point? Has anyone stayed to see this film?
But I think, I did notice the shootout scene. There's some really bad continuity, and I think a lot of it is they figured, well, we'll just have this massive shootout. When we edit it together, it'll all make sense. And it doesn't. So they kind of, like, push it to the side rather quickly. I think the idea was, of course, that it was kind of like... For want of a better term, it was kind of a Mexican standoff situation where they're all going to kill each other. But they just forgot the part where they kill each other. So they're all shooting at each other. There's bodies flying around. And then it just cuts to fucking 50 Cent chasing Ryan Philippe down the street. for what felt like 20 minutes.
Yes. Yes. And neither
so
one,
I
and neither
think
one of them seemed to be running fast. You know,
neither of them.
Like, you know what it is? I think I've been spoiled by Tom Cruise. When Tom Cruise runs in a film, Tom Cruise runs in a film. Tom Cruise runs like he's being chased by Usain Bolt. When Ryan Phillippe and 50 Cent are running,
Tom Cruise has walked faster than this. Right. If Tom Cruise had a Zimmer frame, he would be going fast. Oh. But it just seems like, it's almost like, my feet hurt.
Weren't you, weren't you hoping for them to get hit by a vehicle? I was hoping the thing was going to end with one of them getting hit by a vehicle.
Well, that would have been enough.
Yes.
But again, you know, it's a pretty lame. There are moments in the film that I found to be quite entertaining and fun, but all the important stuff wasn't.
No. And most of the entertaining and fun required people who actually acted. When Bruce Willis is on screen, enjoyable. The black gentleman in the Randy Couture gun thing with the black gentleman, he helps the scene, and Randy is great in it. Enjoyable.
He's perfect.
James Remar, when he's on,
yeah.
They're not fun scenes, but he's
no,
good.
I
he's
get
good
you.
In
I get you.
But whenever it's 50 Cent or Ryan Phillippe by themselves or together, punch yourself in the dick, it's actually going to be a much better time.
That's where the problems start. Yeah. Like I say, they're voids. They're complete voids. Ryan Phillippe doesn't want to be there. 50 Cent can't act. And that's what the whole film hangs on, their relationship.
We don't want Ryan Phillippe to be there either.
No, but I mean the whole film rests on them, and they're not capable, or one's not capable. One wants to be at home jerking off or whatever. but I will say this: I don't think there's any bad acting in the film, right? I think the two people, the culprits, 50 Cent and Ryan Phillippe. Oh, as we've addressed, they are the problem with the film. Everyone else is thinking, I'm in a movie with Bruce Willis.
True, but they're not. But only a few of them are actually in the movie with Bruce Willis. That's the thing.
I think they're all pretty good. All the henchmen and the heavies and everyone, they're all pretty good for the kind of movie they're in.
I think the best way to explain it, I think you might be right. I think this is poorly written and poorly directed.
Oh, that's without question. Without question.
The one guy who plays the guy who's supposed to be the fence, but also the boyfriend of his sister.
Well,
he's from the show The Shield, and he's amazing in The Shield. And he's actually pretty decent in this.
Yeah, Jay Carnes, his name is. He plays Russell. Yeah, he played Dutch in The Shield.
He's great in The Shield.
The cop who thought he was like the psychologist type. He wants to be in fucking Silence of the Lambs, doesn't he?
But he's great in The Shield.
How the mighty have fallen, though, yes.
Well, yeah.
You're just literally playing someone who's to get killed on screen to show what a badass Ryan Phillippe is.
Well, look, I'm going to be honest with you. He's not the only person in The Shield who's going to be in a couple of these movies, because I do believe Michael Chiklis makes a few appearances coming down the road.
I'm sold on those already. He's like a squashed down Bruce Willis, isn't he? Like a
little, he's Bruce Willis's mini-me. Oh, good Lord.
Well, I was trying to find the budget for this movie, and I don't really want to say this, because the rumor is it's like nearly 20 million.
Well, Bruce took a big chunk.
That can't be right.
I bet, because Felipe probably didn't want to be in it. They probably had to pay him more than he's probably worth. You know
apparently
what?
Apparently it made 2 million.
You know where a lot of this money went to? You're going to laugh at it, but there's probably some truth. The fucking soundtrack.
Oh,
somebody got paid for their shitty fucking music to be in this soundtrack.
But apparently this movie made about $2 million globally.
You know what? It made money off of Willis, and it made it overseas.
Of course.
That's it.
Oh, of course. And 50 Cent. Definitely 50 Cent.
Maybe at the start. But then people were like, Bruce is decent.
No, but I can't believe that. I was trying to find the budget for this, and there was a rumor to be 20 mil. I can't fucking believe that. No way. Maybe, I think maybe 2 million.
Well, if you did buy a ticket to go see this overseas, because this went straight to video here, and you went to see Willis, you weren't disappointed. If your whole reason was to see Bruce Willis act in a film, Bruce Willis delivered.
Absolutely. But like you say, I think we've covered the important areas of this film.
The best part is the credits. No, I was kidding. I think they probably have shitty music in that, too. I think that fucking band. I'm not even going to look them up. I'm not
going to
give them
airtime.
Yeah. And not even a 50 Cent song makes it. How about that? 50 himself wouldn't put music into this.
I would have put money on that, though, wouldn't you?
100%. I'd put 50 Cent on it.
Yeah, I bet he got a theme, you know, like the end credits or or something in them. No, nothing.
Nothing. Mm-mm. So, there you go.
Looking for my so-called friend, man. He shot me. I'm going to find him.
So you can shoot him?
Are you retarded? Are you handicapped? You think you're going to come into my town and take down poker games, shoot whoever you want without my permission?
Are you done with your speech? Take it easy, Pete. What's the name of the kid that shot you?
Vincent. Vincent Long.
Vincent Long that runs with John R.'s crew?
Yeah, he's been hanging around.
Congratulations. You managed to piss off a very important group of people that I make money with. That means you owe me now.
Well, I guess I will start this time on our favorite scene.
Favorite scene.
My favorite scene from this film, we kind of talked about it. It is when Randy Couture accidentally blows his fucking brains out fucking around with the gun. I think it's a combination of, like you said, when Randy's fucking around, he is good in that moment being the dumbass, just being the tough guy spinning the gun, fucking around. Yeah. And I apologize. I don't know the gentleman's name off the top of my head right now, but the black gentleman who plays 50 Cent's hookup guy, his main guy there, he is spectacular. He is funny. He's been in other things before. He's a funny dude. Like I said, I would have preferred to see him in the 50 Cent role. He would have been a lot more believable and would have delivered a hell of a lot better performance than fucking 50 Cent does. But he made that whole thing fucking enjoyable. And actually, if you look back at it, I think it may have been 50 Cent's best scene himself acting it, because the other guy was kind of leading the way.
I agree.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree.
In that moment, 50 was really more of the supporting actor to this gentleman because he has most of the lines. So that is my favorite scene from this top-notch thriller. Yours, sir.
From what I can figure out, isn't the guy with the guns and the weed, is, I think his name is Omar J. Dorsey. That's the name of the actor, I believe.
Okay, well, he was spectacular.
From my very quick, terrible... research, which, you know, just never listen to me, but that's from what I can find out. My favorite scene, are we talking favorite scenes here?
We are. Welcome back.
Well, sorry, I was just doing that bit of research. This is tough. Okay, no, easily for me, it's a very simple scene, but it's Bruce Willis lamenting the decline of sports coverage in newspapers while he's having his breakfast.
It's like his first scene, one of his first scenes.
I think it's his first scene, and it's just his mannerisms. It's just so Bruce Willis, you know? It's who we love and why we love him.
Yes, he keeps that John McClane / moonlighting David, what's his last name in it?
David
Addison. That wisecracking wise ass. He still has a bit of that in him, you know what I mean? That soul of his character, even though he's not playing those characters.
Yeah, in this, he's ponderous, and he's looking to the sky a bit and lamenting the shame that people are watching this stuff on their phones now, and there's no need for newspapers anymore.
Yeah.
You know, he's like being the old geezer.
Yeah.
Waving his fist.
He's taking poorly written dialogue and giving it life.
Yes.
Because it's just bullshit. You know, we got to come up with some cool dialogue for this guy to say, but he actually fucking delivers it. And they probably were like, we just wrote us a fucking Oscar-winning script when he delivers that.
You know what? I wouldn't be surprised if Bruce Willis read this script, read his lines, and thought, let me rephrase that. I bet Bruce Willis just read his lines.
Yes. He was like, I don't want to know the rest.
Yeah. Or just didn't care at that point. Just thought, no, this guy's funny. I like him.
Yeah. Yeah. I can make him funny. Yeah.
I know how to play this guy. I can change this. I know how to say that. I can sprinkle a little magic over this and that. So I think he probably read his own lines and thought, you know what? I get to hang out with, you know, these guys. You know, I know who they are. Why not? Boom.
Well,
million clams.
He delivered.
A couple of days work.
I think he got probably paid a little bit more. If it's $20 million budget, he probably saw 5 to 10.
That can't be right. But that's all I could find out. But anyway, so yeah, definitely when he's, you know, talking about like people finding out all this information now on their mobile phones and him and he's going to miss newspapers, I just thought that was just a great little moment, and he really sells it.
You'll start us off with your favorite line of dialogue from this. I mean, I'm surprised it wasn't nominated for an Oscar for Best Original Screenplay in 2011, but apparently it just missed out.
Best one-liner.
I'm going to give it my best.
All right.
I will give it my all. It is in the scene where they're drowning the Russian. Because as you pointed out, they need some information and they'll kill any Russian to get that information.
Well, accidentally, I think that scene.
But yeah. But Bruce Willis is heavy. They've got a guy dunked up and he's dunked upside down in a fucking fish tank. Not a fish. Yeah. Like a fish tank type thing. And he says, listen, you stupid fucking Russian son of a bitch. You're not going to grow gills anytime soon, so I suggest you tell the man what he wants to know. And then the guy fucking, and then he just drowns. They leave him in there too long. And I think Bruce Willis and his henchmen just look at each other and they're like, I think we left him in there too long.
Yep.
Well, they put him out and he fucking drowned. Yeah, so it is literally the heavy fucking doom, one of the typical threats that you hear in a crime movie. You fucking dumb Russian son of a bitch.
Mine is the same guy. Yeah. I think it's the same guy. And so when Bruce's like, what's he doing? He goes, I think he's drowning, boss. That's it.
That's literally the only good scene in the movie. Yes, really.
It really is. Yeah. He goes, I think he's drowning, boss. That's it. It was just so matter of fact. He delivered it so perfectly. Like, you know, the guy was playing with him. They really leaned into the whole Goomba fucking, you know, funny, you know, making fun of kind of that whole mentality. And I really appreciate it. It was one of the few things that made me laugh. Bruce is like, he's like, what the fuck's he doing? He goes, I think he's drowning, boss. Like, I just left away.
Hey, you stupid fucking Russian son of a bitch. Oh.
All right. So that leads us to the best performance.
Best performance.
For me, look, it's the title of this fucking podcast. Hands down, it's Bruce Willis. Bruce Willis puts out the best performance. He is acting on all cylinders. He's really leaning into this role. Some of you who watch it might think he's overdoing it, but that's because no one else literally on screen from any moment before him or after him is putting in any kind of fucking real performance. Bruce Willis is actually really putting in and attempting to play this mob boss. And I thank him for it, because when he was on screen, I enjoyed him being on screen. It's the only reason I kept with the movie, is that I'm glad they didn't kill him off early. I'm worried that there's going to be a few movies coming down the road where they're going to kill his character off early, and we're going to struggle through like an hour and a half of a film with no Willis to talk about and just have to fucking hope that it's like a quick dental procedure, but I don't think it's going to be. But for me, it's Mr. Willis. For you, sir?
Well, I couldn't agree more. It's Bruce Willis. He brings his A game to a Z-grade movie. This is everything we like about Bruce Willis, minus him getting physically involved that much in the movie, you know, violence wise. You know, yeah, he's the one who starts firing at the end, I think.
Yeah, I forget. You know, it happens so fast. I don't remember who fucking shoots
everyone.
Yeah.
But you know, as we've addressed, there aren't really any performances in this movie other than the old hands, which are Bruce Willis and James Remar. And you know, special shout out
James
to those guys,
because
James Remar, he's chewing the scenery. He's doing, that's the funny thing. James Remar is doing James Remar. That's what James Remar does. He's a very ferocious, intense actor. Bruce Willis is very sarcastic, smart-assed, and kind of cool. And they're both doing that in their best way possible. So yeah. So for me, best performance without a doubt is Mr. Willis.
That'll lead us to your favorite character or best character.
Favorite character.
Who was the character you enjoyed the most?
Randy Couture, the muscle. I thought he was just a great... Well, this is it. As we said, you know, earlier about James Remar and Bruce Willis, he's, you know, I mean, I know we're not talking about performance here, but he's really the only other memorable character in the film. I actually felt a bit disappointed when he blew his own brains out that he wasn't going to be in the film anymore. So I'm like, well, I'm not enjoying Ryan Phillippe. I'm not certainly not enjoying 50 Cent. But then I never thought I would enjoy 50 Cent as an, you know, I kind of knew that he was going to fall flat in this movie anyway, because I'd seen him in other things. He's not an actor. Simple as that. He's no Ice-T.
No.
You know, he's no Ice Cube.
No. He's no Vanilla Ice.
Who is, though? Who really is? Vanilla Ice is, you know, he is like the Marlon Brando of rappers when it comes to acting.
He truly is, yes. However, folks, I don't want to give spoilers, but a little foreshadowing. He may be making an appearance 2 months from the time you listen to this. He may be in another film really soon.
He can turn me round, you know. But what we'll say, you know, is Randy Couture, at least he's believable in the role, but that's not what we're talking. We're not talking about the acting. We're talking about the character. I thought he was a great character because I think initially when he's kind of running 50 Cent down, you know, when they meet, he's kind of as if to sort, you know, he's kind of trying to show him who's boss sort of thing. He's like, look, you're coming with me. I'm in fucking charge. So yeah, he's throwing the N word around and that could be considered a little bit distasteful.
Yes. But I get it.
But ultimately, they kind of become a bit pally later on. And then he blows his own brains out. And I did think, that's a shame, because I was enjoying the guy. I was enjoying the character.
I was glad he blew his brains out. I'm not gonna lie to you. However, my favorite character is the guy I wish kept going forward, and that is G Money, played by Omar Dorsey. And while you were doing your rant, I knew he looked familiar. A year later, he's in Django Unchained. He plays Chicken Charlie. He's one of the guys who's in the back
of the wagon.
He is, and here's some trivia on a Bruce Willis podcast from the guy who hosts the Church of Tarantino. He is the only current person to be a part of an end credit scene in a Tarantino film. Django Unchained is the only current film that has an end credit scene, and the guy says the N-word. He is at the end of it, and he gets to say it. So Chicken Charlie, Mr. Omar Dorsey, is my favorite as G-Money. I would have loved to see him more in the film. I would have loved to see him and 50 Cent go around. If he could have teamed up with 50 Cent for this film, it would have been better.
You wanted to see more of an actor in this film?
Well, yeah, I know. What a fucking ass. What a prick. What a dick I am.
Shame on you.
Yes.
No, absolutely. No, I agree. He was great. He was great. But, you know, again, you know, you start thinking, you think different people in different roles in this film. Yeah. You could have had something. Like I said,
it would have been a little bit more enjoyable.
If Ryan Philippe was the lead, at least you would have had.
This film has such poor writing, but yeah, if there had been a little bit stronger cast, they might have been able to, you know, muddle this through. Yeah. They might have been a muddle and make it a little bit more enjoyable. I know what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah, but I'll go on record. I think. I've seen worse big budget movies than this.
That's a fair statement.
But I think, you know, you've got to adapt when we all know this. When you watch a movie, you have to adapt to the kind of film you watch.
You do, but you also should still be critical. If you're going to be critical of other movies,
obviously that doesn't mean everything's good. Because
I mean, they spent
nowhere,
$20 million of somebody's money on this piece of shit.
Yeah. So but what I'm saying is, look, this is not a great movie. This isn't even a good movie. This is below average on my letterbox score. This is below average, but I have seen worse films with a bigger budget made by people who really should know what they're doing and had actual actors in their films. So for that, fair. I will say this film deserves a little bit of a salute, but not sucking as much as it probably should.
The moment of truth.
I realized that what we did is we should make this a two for how we answer this question. Is it a Bruce or is it a deuce? One, the first thing is we should say, and we'll start this podcast now. Did Willis drop a deuce or a Bruce? And then is this a film, a Bruce or a deuce? Fairness? Like, is it a film
diplomatic. Very diplomatic.
I think it is my turn at this point. I believe, yes, we're going flipping.
Yeah.
So I will say that Bruce himself, his acting in this, he dropped a Bruce. His acting was fantastic. He really put in a performance. He did not sell out. Maybe he took a paycheck and knew the movie was going to be anything. But that being said, he put in a performance. He showed up on set and he gave it his all for the role that he was given and the minimal things that were surrounding him. So for that, I will say he dropped a Bruce.
He most definitely dropped a Bruce.
This film, however, dropped a deuce and is now a double turd tonic. This movie got a half star from me on Letterboxd. It was that awful, and I've seen it twice now. I will never go back and watch it again. I saw it two times more than I ever thought I would have to. But yes, so for me, Mr. Willis drops a Bruce. This film overall drops a deuce.
This film was definitely dropped a deuce.
Right, okay. So as far as Mr. Willis is concerned, he definitely dropped a Bruce. As you've already just pointed out, he brings his A game. He totally delivers. He lets us know why we love Bruce Willis the way we do. He does all the right things and makes all the right moves. This is definitely Mr. Willis dropping a Bruce.
He most definitely dropped a Bruce.
However, you gave this half a star.
Yeah.
I gave it 1.5. Okay.
Wow.
Way short. It's below average. For the type of movie it is, it's below average. I won't watch this movie. I won't be watching this movie again. But, you know, under the right circumstances, it was 85 minutes. It crammed. I feel like it did cram quite a lot in there in the 85 minutes. So it wasn't boring. And, you know, James Remar, Bruce Willis, Randy Couture, the man Omar, they all made the film worthwhile. It just wasn't made worthwhile by the leads. And that is the fucking problem with this movie. So I didn't hate the movie, but I won't be watching it again. So I would have to concede and say the movie drops a deuce. But it's not a big deuce. It nips one off.
This film most definitely dropped a deuce.
For you, it's not a big deuce. For me, it's chock full of old peanuts floating at the top of the bowl.
Wow.
Not very good.
No, this is... It nips.
So, how about this? In fairness, we've had two contrasting films to start with. The first one is the bar to which it's all going to be in. And now this is now the low bar. So now we're going to have what's in between. Will something drop below setup? And can something get above assassination of a high school president?
According to you, nothing could be lower.
Look, you're not allowed to not give stars. I have a feeling there's going to be some coming down the road that are going to be worse. But we don't know.
But see, obviously where I'm coming from, absolutely something could be worse.
Yes.
Because 1.5 is worse places to be than 1.5.
This is true.
So, but ultimately, yes, I won't be watching this film again.
And that will do it for our second episode. Please feel free to reach out to us on the show socials, which can be found in the show notes, and tell us what you thought of this film, how you feel about Bruce as an actor, or even to let us know what you think about the show. We'd also greatly appreciate it if you'd give the show a like, leave us a review, and follow the show on the Last of the Action Heroes podcast network, where you can find other amazing podcasts dedicated to such iconic action stars as Stallone, Lundgren, Van Damme, Schwarzenegger, and Seagal. The link to the network can also be found in the show's notes. So won't you please join us again next month as Steve and I will be reviewing Bruce's role in the 2011 crime thriller Catch 44 to see if he dropped a deuce or if he dropped a Bruce. Until then.
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.